Well, the Dow and the Nasdaq are soaring once again, and Mitt Romney spent yesterday in New York shaking the Wall Street money tree. We'll talk about that later. But the street is shaking for another reason today, the op-ed by a departing Goldman Sachs employee that said nothing much has changed since the financial crisis of 2008, thank you. And oh, by the way, Goldman Sachs disdains its clients. So call us up if you work on Wall Street and have an opinion about this. Apparently it's landing like a bomb inside Goldman offices, according to the Times today, 212-433-WNYC, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. With us to talk about it is Josh Brown, sometimes known as the Reformed Broker. He is a financial advisor in New York and author of the book Backstage Wall Street, an insider's guide to knowing who to trust, who to run from, and how to maximize your investments. Josh Brown, welcome back to WNYC.
How's it going, Brian?
Good. All right. So lots of employees have lots of opinions about lots of their employers. Why is this one rocking Goldman Sachs world so much?
I think, at least to my knowledge, this is the most public that anyone who's left the fold, so to speak, has been. And a lot of the reason for that is most people that leave Goldman go on to an even more successful career, and they end up in a hedge fund or at another bank, and they continue to do business with Goldman. So you very rarely see somebody burn a bridge to this extent and this publicly. So I think that's why we're hearing so much about it.
The two main contentions seem to be that something has changed and that something hasn't changed, that Goldman has changed to be less devoted to its clients' best interests, but that the financial crisis has not changed Wall Street's culture of hubris and arrogance. Do you read it both ways?
You know, it's a little bit more complex than that, because I think that the culture has changed since the crash, in that Wall Street is shrinking. And I feel, to a certain extent, a lot of areas of the business are simply disappearing. If you look at what Dodd-Frank is essentially going to outlaw, a lot of areas of prop trading and things that were really profitable for firms for a long time, in addition to which there's just less need for a lot of these types of banking activities, securitization activities. So you know that when anything is backed into a corner, it becomes even more violent and dangerous. So I think the bravado and the drive to be the top dog in your particular category within a firm is even more prevalent now, because look at the layoffs of Wall Street. It's one of the hardest hit industries, and they haven't stopped yet. They're still laying people off at all these banks. So I think to some extent there's a little bit of that going on, but I want to make the point that the vast majority of people who go to work on Wall Street at a Goldman Sachs, for example, are not going to work so they can rip a client's eyeballs out, are not bad people who are inherently looking to do evil things. I think most people are good, but just like in any other business, sometimes there's frustration. People refer to their customers in a derogatory way. You know this happens in a New York City restaurant, at a law firm, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, to that extent, this has probably been a little bit blown out of proportion. I can't believe I'm defending Goldman, but
talk about the clients in a derogatory way. Like, one of the things that came out since was that they call the clients Muppets in some meeting. Now, that might be different if they're referring to them as Elmo or as Cookie Monster, but seriously, what does it mean if they call their clients Muppets?
I think we shouldn't rush to judgment. Muppet can be a term of endearment. I sometimes call my clients Teletubbies.
I think that
the term Muppet is really just almost like, you know, my counterparty is a child, and he's a Muppet. And what, you know, I don't think that that's what the vast majority of people at Goldman do in their day-to-day business. I'm sure it's a few offhanded remarks made, and then it becomes the focal point because it's in this op-ed.
All right, listeners, anybody who works on Wall Street want to get in on this? Are you off from work or listening at your desk or whatever and want to have this conversation? Talk about the impact of Greg Smith's op-ed in the New York Times yesterday, his last day at Goldman Sachs, and what you think it means for the street, how accurate you think it is, what do you think it implies should change? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anyone may call 212-433-WNYC or go to WNYC.org. And click on Brian Lehrer Show as we talk with Josh Brown, financial advisor, sometimes known as the Reformed broker. Let's drill down a little bit more on what this means. So when Greg Smith writes, for example, "It makes me ill how callously people still talk about ripping off clients." If he's right, what kind of ripping off is that?
So I think that gets to the heart of the matter. That's a really important question. There are certain areas within a large investment bank like a Goldman's, and it's Goldman Sachs because he happened to work there, but they're all emulating Goldman Sachs. So you got to look at them all as one type of firm. There are certain areas of the firm where executing on behalf of a client is paramount, and they really work their butts off to do the best job they can because they're in competition. So asset management would be a good example. I doubt very highly anyone working at Goldman Sachs Asset Management, also known as GSAM, is looking to do ill toward a client because they're managing money for the client. I think they want to do the best they can. However, there are other components within investment banks where you are the de facto counterparty to your client. And a great example of that was the big dust-up we had a couple of years ago with some of the collateralized products, some of these opaque mortgage funds where they're really trying to sell their own assets off their own balance sheet and find institutional clients who are dumb enough to buy them. And so in that case, I think there's definitely some element that's still there, and I don't think the crisis ended that type of activity entirely.
So, for example, Goldman had already become emblematic for the Securities and Exchange Commission suit in 2010, alleging that Goldman sold
the biggest ever.
Right. Sold toxic mortgage securities investments without telling the investors that the company itself was betting against them.
That's
and
right.
Allegedly that the securities were designed to fail. Goldman denied it, but they settled for more than $500 million.
That's right.
So has that affected a change in the culture or any introspection?
You know, I'm not in the room, and I certainly don't believe for a minute that anyone at Goldman Sachs, for example, wants to have a replay of that particular bit of nastiness. So I think to some extent it probably has. But can you completely eradicate that when you're dealing in some of the most exotic and leveraged and opaque potential transactions imaginable? It's probably very hard to do that. I have a pretty ironclad law that's taken me years to formulate when I deal with my clients, who of course are high net worth and not institutions. But my, you know, Brown's law of product compensation is twofold. Number one, the more a broker is paid to sell a product, the worse it is for the client. And then number two, the more difficult it is to explain exactly what makes up a product and how it functions, the worse it probably is for the client. And I think when you're dealing with things like CMOs, CDOs, and all the various derivations thereof, it's almost impossible for the average person to understand exactly how these things work, and a lot of the buyers and institutions are pretty average.
One other thing before we go to the phones, and all our lines are full. A lot of people want to talk about their experiences, former Wall Street employees, people who have friends who are Wall Street employees. But you said Goldman, for example, and we've been talking about the culture of Wall Street in general. But part of the point here from this 33-year-old broker, Greg Smith, who left yesterday and placed this op-ed, is that Goldman was supposed to be a cut above the rest, more client-focused and just plain more ethical than other Wall Street firms. Was that ever the case, as far as you know?
You know, the old saying, I think it came from one of their leaders of decades past, Gus Levy, was that Goldman is long-term greedy, meaning they'll do the best they can in the interim for the clients because over the long term, that's how they'll really get rich. And I think what the op-ed is saying is that used to be the culture, and it's no longer there anymore. I think a lot of that is environment over anything that the particular firm had. You know, these were in the 70s, these were all private partnerships. These weren't public companies that had quarterly earnings to make every single quarter like clockwork. And the minute you go public, two things happen. Number one, the partners are no longer jointly and separately liable. And then number two, you can lay off risk on other shareholders. The firm gets much bigger. And at the end of the day, you'll take risks that you wouldn't take if it was your own capital as a partner on the line. So I think there's some element of that, but that didn't happen in the last 5 years. That's been going on for 40 years now. And I think from that standpoint, Greg Smith is a little bit naive.
Joe in Brooklyn, former Wall Street, right, Joe? Joe, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm concerned about this whole Goldman Sachs scenario and other investment bankers. They're the most corrupt. I mean, they have these politicians in their pockets. Not just that, nobody likes to work as an intern, but there's one place people love to work as an intern, which is Capitol Hill. And the reason for that is because people like Jim Cramer, Mad Money guy, how do you expect him to have all the information? And other people don't have it because the politicians, for example, when they okay a drilling somewhere in some places, these interns pass on the information to these Wall Street people at Goldman Sachs. And secondly, Goldman Sachs is mostly the upper management is now Indians. And Indians, you know, I'm Indian too, they're the most corrupt. They're moving so much money to India and Swiss Bank. Like if Swiss Bank opens up the account, for example, WikiLeaks, one of the Swiss bankers dropped all the names. They were mostly Indian names. And where did the money come from? Mostly from Goldman Sachs and these people who don't pay their taxes and transfer overseas. Close to $2 trillion.
Joe, that's a lot. And let me get a reaction from Josh Brown to some of it. You can react to any of that. He threw a lot in there. But one of the things, you know, he mentioned India. The broker who left here, the executive of Goldman Sachs who left, Greg Smith, was based in London. I gather he's a New Yorker, but he was based in London. Would the culture be any different in one place or the other?
That's a really interesting question. I think the city, which is what they call the financial sector in London, I think the city's got its own idiosyncrasies, and but it's important to understand this is all one large corporate culture. And one thing about multinational firms is they love to shuffle employees back and forth between the different cities and locales they operate in. So I doubt there would be that dramatic of a difference.
John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. How are you?
All right.
Thanks for taking my call. I was watching The Muppets 40 years ago in London growing up. And really, it's we use it in street talk now or slang or colloquialism. It basically means idiot or fool. And something like a jester, and I just wanted to say that, you know, it may have been coined in London. The Muppets were made in America, but the phrase, I have many London friends and say, oh, he's a Muppet, meaning he's an idiot or a jerk. That's it. That's what I wanted to say.
I would think so. You know, we've seen, and thank you, John.
There are some very intelligent Muppets, though. What wasn't Bunsen and Beaker? Weren't they scientists?
We've received several calls now saying that there's no way Muppet is anything but derogatory. And, you know, we call these listeners listeners. So, whatever. David in Manhattan, former Wall Street?
Not former Wall Street. I have 22 years of experience as a consultant on Wall Street. I'm also a professor of business ethics at Rutgers and at Molloy College on Long Island.
Okay,
I have a lot to say about this subject. The first thing I want to say is that it's not isolated to Goldman.
Right.
The second thing I want to say is, and I worked for hedge funds. I actually set them up. I set up broker dealers. I do a lot of the work of helping firms manage themselves and deal with regulation. And I got to tell you, you know, I've read through Dodd-Frank. I'm working with Dodd-Frank issues, and I got to tell you, the issues that need to be addressed are cultural issues. They are not issues that regulation and coercion are going to fix by themselves. It's a fantasy. It is a complete fantasy to believe that you can regulate away Wall Street's problems. The culture in Wall Street is a culture of rapacity. Right? That's what gets rewarded on Wall Street. There is a sort of Darwinistic evolutionary kind of mindset. It's knuckles dragging on the ground at times, to be perfectly blunt about it. I think the country knows it. I think that Wall Street knows it. And I think the cynicism that was expressed, you know, with the Muppets comment, is a pervasive cynicism. So you've got to address things from the top down and bottom up. Everything from the commission system to the way the country, by the way, looks at Wall Street. It gives Wall Street a pass.
Hey Joe,
I'm curious because you're
an ethics guy. I'm curious what your thoughts are about the portion of the op-ed where Greg basically makes the case that if we don't treat our clients well, they're going to go elsewhere, like almost as if the market self-polices. You and I know that that's a fallacy. There is nowhere else for them to go to a certain extent, and everyone is kind of the same. So isn't that a little bit naive of Greg Smith to think that they have to take care of the clients because they're going to lose them?
Well, I think that, look, you know, the broader issue with one of the first things I teach my students in business ethics classes is that there are three fallacies, and I'll just go into one of them to answer your question. The main fallacy here is that businesses exist to make profits. That sounds absolutely, you might think that sounds naive, and I'm not saying you do, but that sounds, you know, prima facie naive. If you don't serve, if you're not in business to serve and to provide the goods and services that your client wants, if that's not your objective, right, you're going to be focused on something else, which is profits. And that's why we are in a culture that only rewards short-term gain, not long-term investment. You know, it is.
But Joe, Wall Street manufactures money. That's what they make.
But that's their product. I'm David, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Wall Street doesn't manufacture money. Wall Street makes money. Wall Street only exists to make money, and that's its mindset from the time the doors open in the morning to the time they close at night.
So, David, let me ask you, when is that good and when is that bad? Nobody's really against making money. And in theory, if a company that does what Goldman Sachs does is trying to make money, then that's going to benefit its clients. And if it's trying to make money for its clients, it's going to benefit itself. So when does the capitalist drive become a good thing because it makes money in a way for everybody?
And when does it become a
destructive thing?
With all due respect, a lot of things that you just mentioned, the capitalist drive, capitalism doesn't mean greed, okay? The language you get on Wall Street and the language you'll get on forums like CNBC suggests that, you know, capitalism is this rough and tumble. It doesn't mean that. You know, the very foundation of capitalism is to create a system that provides social welfare, goods for the community, for the society. This notion that capitalism is about a sort of Wild West kind of culture is a false notion. Of course businesses have to make money. Of course clients have to make money. The issue is that you're not entitled to make an unlimited amount of money without giving the services that are due. There's got to be a connection between what Wall Street does in terms of providing goods to society and what it gets out of that process.
Thank you very much for calling and articulating that and saying the other things you said. So Josh Brown, author of Backstage Wall Street and a financial advisor in New York known as the Reform Broker. David raises an even larger point than the interest of the clients versus the interest of the firm. There's a whole
interest of society.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
And, you know, because what happened in the financial crisis, it wasn't just people who were investors in the CDOs or whatever. It was regular folks without stock portfolios who got creamed by the housing crisis, which was to whatever extent Wall Street's making. And if they're dismissive of the charges at Goldman about how they treat their wealthy clients, imagine how dismissive they must be about the notion that they're responsible for the problems in the economy at large.
So in the writing of my book, it forced me to do a lot of research, and the centerpiece of the book is there's this relationship between Wall Street and Main Street, and how has it gotten along since the beginning. And, you know, there are certain periods of time in this country where Wall Street and Main Street have a goal that's entirely aligned. And then there are certain periods of time where Wall Street's goals and aims are not aligned with what's best for society. A really good example of the former, if you go back to the World War I war bond effort, Wall Street sold all those bonds. Wall Street fanned out across the country for the first time. Most Americans, it's not like today, most Americans had absolutely nothing to do with stocks and bonds. Wall Street opened up a million brokerage accounts, filled them with war bonds. We win World War I. Everyone gets their interest and their principal back. And then all of a sudden, there are a million brokerage accounts sitting in cash. And firms like Merrill Lynch, which was around back then, and others which are no longer around, looked at this and they said, we've done some good, and now we have all of these new clients, they're fully loaded with cash, we better come up with some things to sell them. And then the rise of the closed-end funds and things like that, which maybe weren't so good. So it's always been a give and take between Wall Street and the society at large. It's always been a little bit of, okay, now we're benefiting the country, and then things go awry. That's a cycle, and it's going to play out as long as you and I are alive.
Let me get one more call in here, then we're going to go on to Wall Street and Mitt Romney. He was here to raise money from them yesterday. Also, Obama's financial relationship with New York City. Kerry in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Kerry.
Hi.
So what's your relationship to this?
I have a friend who was just laid off on Monday from Goldman Sachs. She's a sort of mid-career senior executive.
Why didn't he write an op-ed? He missed his window.
He's that kind of person. But so that the link to this article, and she.
Sorry, Carrie. The phone line's just too bad, so we're going to have to let you go. But what of Greg Smith? Before you go, Josh Brown, can he get work on Wall Street again if
he
wants?
Don't fall out of your chair if he launches his own firm. I really wouldn't be surprised. And by the way, he's not the first whistleblower. Meredith Whitney left Oppenheimer. She was covering bank stocks, and she told stories about the pressure on her to be more positive versus her downgrades of companies like Citigroup. And she's doing just fine, opened up her own advisory. It helps that she happened to have been right in the things she was telling clients. But she told all the inside stories. It's, everyone gets a second act and sometimes a third act. I think you'll see Elliot Spitzer reenter politics. Henry Blodgett is now running a website that de facto is publishing economic research when he was kicked out of the business of research. So don't fall out of your chair if we haven't heard the last of Greg Smith again. I wouldn't be surprised to see him open up shop on his own.
Josh Brown, financial advisor, known as the Reformed Broker, and author of the book Backstage Wall Street, an insider's guide to knowing who to trust, who to run from, and how to maximize your investments. Thank you so much for talking about this with us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Romney and Obama trying to shake the New York money tree, and that means a lot of Wall Street cash going into politics. Surprise, surprise. Romney was here last night. We'll talk to our Anna Sale and Ben Nick Confessori from the New York Times. Stay with us.